Now, having said this, and much can be said, actually I'm summarizing, therefore I will not say more on this subject because it's a very difficult subject. But we run over to the next two verses. These two verses give a further insight into the relationship between the movement and that which is behind the movement. And this relationship, I had said, can be expressed in three manners. And these three manners can be given a specific name so that it can be best understood. In any case, Upanishads have given the names, not in this Upanishad, but if you read the totality of the Upanishads, these three names are given: Atman, Purusha, Ishvara. The relationship between the movement and that which is behind the movement can be described as a relationship between Atman on one side and the movement, Purusha on the one side and the movement, Ishvara on the one side and the movement. It is the same reality, but it has three different ways of relating to the movement. Atman is a word which is used when movement is related to reality as emerging out of Atman, as emerging out of the reality. Just as a river flows out of the mountain, similarly the universe or all movement moves out of the reality. This kind of relationship is called the relationship between Atman and Maya. Movement is called Maya, and the reality from which it is moving out is called Atman. The second is when the reality places itself in the movement and plays with that movement, then that reality is called Purusha and the movement is called Prakriti. The third is when the reality is seen to be the lord of the movement, then the reality is called Ishvara and the movement is called Shakti. It is the same reality but known by three names because of the three relationships that reality can have towards its movement. Now, in these two verses, we are told that we are supposed to realize all the three aspects of reality. Know reality as Ishvara, know him as Purusha, know him as Atman. And when you do that, then you will realize that the whole thing is nothing but oneness. And when that oneness is realized, all sorrow, all delusion vanishes. You will see that the whole emphasis is upon the destruction of sorrow. Just as in the first part, the idea was that you enjoy the world. And we were told how to enjoy, and we were told that if you renounce, you will enjoy. Now in this second movement, we are given a little greater depth, that you will enjoy, that is, all sorrow will vanish, if you realize that that Lord to whom you are renouncing everything is not only the master of all things, but he is also the originator of all things. All things move out of him, therefore he is Atman. And he is also in play with everything in the world. Now read, let us read this sixth and seventh verse. But he who sees everywhere the self in all existences, and all existences in the self, shrinks not thereafter from anything, from aught, from anything. He in whom it is a self-being that has become all existences that are becomings. This is the description of Atman, one who has become all things, from which he himself issues out of everything. He in whom it is a self-being that has become all existences that are becomings, he has the perfect knowledge. How shall he be deluded? Whence shall he have grief who sees everywhere oneness?